Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back with another bonus episode. Today I am joined by Julia Marchesi and we are talking about The Gunslinger, The Journey Begins. It is the first comic in this Gunslinger series, so I have now covered all of the beginnings episodes and trades respectively. So Julia, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm fantastic. How are you? Gunslinger.
I am really enjoying these comics. So, you know, anytime I get to talk about them, that's a good day for me.
Yes. Well, I consider myself a tower junkie, although I have not made it all the way to the tower yet. I have read up through halfway through Song of Susanna, where I stopped when we were about to meet someone very excited and couldn't turn the page because I was too excited. So decided to read everything relating to the Dark Tower series that he's written and didn't realize it's pretty much everything. So that made me read pretty much everything. So I'll be almost done with every novel he's written very soon, which will lead me back to the Tower again. So then I'll read everything for a second time through and get every reference. And I'm so excited.
Yeah, because I've been reading them so quickly. I'll have guests on and they're like, did you catch this one little thing? I'm like, nope, no, I did not.
Oh, I take notes. I have a highlighter. So like every book that I've read, when I catch something that's connected to the tower, I have a highlighter. I have a little sticky note that I put in there. And like, it's very academic. I'm very nerdy about it.
We love nerdy on this podcast.
Good. I'm your girl. I mean, especially Stephen King nerdery. I mean, right? Like I'm making a film adaptation of one of his stories. How much geekier can you get than that?
Yeah. You know, I do want to bring that up before we wrap this episode. But first, we'll dive into the comic. And, you know, this is 5 issues. They aren't terribly long. They've shortened the issues a little bit from what I can tell from the beginnings series, because a lot of those were running, I want to say, like 25 pages an issue, and these have been kind of cut down more in the 20 to 21, which is normal comic book length. And I think they tightened up the story a little with this one in particular. And, you know, for you, was there any confusion as to what point in time this was taking place, since you had mentioned you hadn't read the Beginnings comics yet?
Yeah, I was actually, because this is the first of the comics that I have read, and I will definitely go back and read all of them when I finish the Tower, because it begins pretty much the same, right? And he's gone, he's going to see Brown, he's talking about things to dinner and like where he would have told him the story of Tull, and now he's telling him a different story. So I was like, oh, wait, what? What is this? Something new. Oh my. And so then I was a little bit thrown because I didn't really know where it fit in. Because like, oh, are we before? Am I learning something new? I don't really know where this is coming from. So it was really exciting.
Yeah, and you had actually messaged me just for a little bit of clarification. And, you know, we're still in sort of the prequel time period for these comics as far as in relation to the novels, because The Beginnings goes through Roland's time kind of as a teenager, and this picks up right where that last trade leaves off in the series. So for The Journey Begins, you know, it's a little misleading because you think you can kind of just jump in here and be like, okay, I got this. But, you know, they cover a couple of things where they do a little bit of explaining, but not too much. So with these comics, I think it's actually better if you read them in order. Not to say that you're doing it wrong by any means, because I know, you know, I asked you to talk about comics and stuff for this, so I appreciate you kind of jumping in the middle here. But for me, I know it would be a little jarring, and you have almost the same creative team. You have Robin Firth as the plotter of these, basically, and consultant. Then you have the script by Peter David. The main difference here is that Sean Phillips is doing some of the art, whereas before we had Jay Lee and Richard Isonov, but it's Sean Phillips and Richard Isonov this time. And then lettering by VC's Russ Wooden. So for anyone who doesn't know, Sean Phillips works a lot with Ed Brubaker, and they do a lot of like crime comics together. So I think that was a good fit for this kind of comic.
Yeah, I thought the art was gorgeous. It was really neat to see somebody else's, in, you know, because obviously the Roland I have in my head is not the Roland everybody else has in their head. So it's nice to see the interpretation of Roland that somebody else's.
Yeah, especially given that Roland is at such a different point in his life for the majority of this comic.
definitely. I've always thought, I guess Guy Pearce is kind of close to the Roland in my head. I think he would be a really good Roland.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to get that out of my head now.
Oh, sorry. Did I just jar it for you?
No.
You must have had a visualization of your own, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have copies of the book that have illustrations with them. So that was kind of more what I had been leaning towards, you know, seeing Roland with longer hair at times. So to see him with this sort of shorter cut, and you kind of see it getting longer as the story goes, and especially when we jump back to, you know, him telling the story, and you're like, oh, you can see how he's aged. And I really like being able to see that difference in this comic.
Mm-hmm. And they had a very kind of dark, foreboding color palette, which was neat.
Yes.
But it was just kind of through the whole thing, it had this like kind of a color tones to it.
Yeah, I really love the pages that have like the blues and the grays, and then you have sort of the reds and the oranges. And even though those are very different colors, it still gives off this same sort of ominous vibe.
Yeah, it really does. But as far as I'm concerned, like any other information I can get about Roland at any point in time of his life, I'll take. Like, I'll always want more stories.
Yeah, these comics have been so good at expanding the universe, especially in relation to Roland, because, you know, I don't want to spoil anything for you from the comics that you haven't read, so I'll touch on Eileen a little broadly here, but she's a completely new character that was introduced in the comics for the comics.
What was the crowd reaction to that? Did people like her?
Honestly, I'm not sure because I have yet to find a bunch of people who have actually read these comics. It seems to just be a handful, but considering they were released by Marvel initially, I feel like there have to be people out there who have read them and have strong opinions about them. But for me, this is an all new thing. I hadn't read these before discovering them for the podcast. And I was like, I kept posting on Twitter, and I'm sure you saw, because that's how you ended up signing up for this episode. I was like, hello, I need some people. And it was kind of crickets the first time or two that I posted.
Well, now you get to voice your opinion on how do you feel about Eileen?
I love that she brings this sort of challenge to the table just simply with her presence. Because you see in this comic kind of how she has this push and pull with Roland almost that I think would be tough for a lot of other characters to have in the same way that she has it.
Well, I think it's neat that they were able to intertwine new material plus material you would actually know from, you know, the Gunslinger and Drawing the Three. You have, you know, the story about Hax, and you're like, oh, okay, we know this story. We know we get to like see him again and go over this again. But we also have new bits inserted. So you are getting new information with the old information as well, which is cool.
Yeah. And I love the incorporation of the Slow Mutants and the Billy Bumblers.
Uh-huh. Yes, of course. Of course. It was, I'm always up for some Billy Bumbler.
You know, the entire time I was reading the books, I had absolutely no idea what these creatures look like. And then I was on either the Dark Tower wiki or the Stephen King wiki, and there was an illustration up, and I was like, oh, that wasn't what I had in my head at all.
Yeah, no, me neither. Not at all. But I'm like, okay. But again, somebody else's interpretation of a Billy Bumbler may not be yours.
Yeah, it's almost like, I don't even know, like a raccoon cat or something? Raccoon dog?
Right.
It's really hard to tell.
Uh-huh. I don't mind it, though. It's cute. And yeah. I, you know, because Oi is such a terrific character, so you're already like, ooh, a Billy Bumbler. And so getting to know kind of more about his species and what they're like, and like they're all very courageous and they're all very loyal, and it's very sweet.
Yeah, one of the nice things about these five issues too is that you even get some flashbacks to Roland as a younger boy, and you get to see three different age groups for Roland, basically three different time periods, if you will. And the way they're able to do that and not make it feel forced, I think has really been good throughout all of these, but especially in The Journey Begins.
Definitely. And just they're very seamless. Like you just, oh, it's the same person. Of course it is. And he has the same reactions, and you can see him becoming the person you see when he's, you know, it really at the getting into that journey.
What do you think of his father just based on this impression they give you in this comic.
He doesn't seem to be very sympathetic. Mm-hmm. He seems to be a hard man, but I would feel like a gunslinger would make you a hard man. You are watching people being killed and you are killing people yourself. I feel like it would be hard to maintain a very sympathetic person because you kind of have to cut that part off for yourself so you don't feel that when you kill people. So Roland's such a good person. You know, it's interesting because they often talk about in the books about how he's not very clever, right? Like he doesn't have sense of humor. I feel like he is. He is very clever. He's just very honest and very steadfast. And like he doesn't embellish things. He just tells them as they are. And mm-hmm. I think that his dad can see that about him. And I think that's what makes him believe him and realize that he's telling the truth. So yeah, I thought it was cool.
Yeah, there's a lot more of him in those Beginnings comics. So if you go back and read those, I think you'll definitely be in for a treat there. But even with the different artist, with Sean Phillips coming in here, they really keep things consistent. Like I personally cannot tell the difference in Sean Phillips' art versus Richard Isonov's art. And sometimes you'll have artists come in and do a few pages and you can really tell. But here, it's just so consistent. I love the coloring, the art, the story too, just brings in that Stephen King essence.
And I'm glad that, you know, that Stephen King himself is giving his permission and being a part of that as well. Because I think like a lot of times it would just kind of be shoved off into this comic company. But the fact that he actually gets to say, okay, and at least sign off on it and say, okay, and not let them just kind of take the story wherever they want.
Yeah. One of the other big moments I wanted to ask you about is his sort of reunion with Susan. And in an effort to not spoil anything for you again, what was your impression of Roland seeing Susan for the first time in this comic?
That it had to be some sort of fantasy or dream. Couldn't be real life. That's how I felt.
Yeah, it definitely gives off those vibes because also, he's fighting invisible men, you know, not men.
Yeah, so anything goes.
Yeah, that is something that I have learned just with reading all of King's fantasy books and the ones that lean more heavily into science fiction. It's really hard to know what's what, especially in the Dark Tower universe, because there are always, you know, magicians popping up, if you will, who know how to influence what you're seeing. And for me, this definitely felt like, you know, he was kind of trapped in this illusion or something, and he was seeing what he wanted to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed.
And you also see how much he's aged here as well versus in the beginnings where he is 14, I want to say. He doesn't even look 14 in those either, though, because, you know, Roland has kind of given off this impression that he's always been a man. You can't really imagine Roland having a childhood.
Right, which they actually say in the comic, right? That he's like never been a child.
And even as a child, he never really looks childish.
I feel like everybody's known a kid like that, right? That like ever since they were tiny, like, oh, you're like a 50-year-old person trapped inside of a 2-year-old. Like they just seem like they're wiser beyond their years. And not that he's like got like uber wisdom, but he just seems to kind of have a world weariness that most children don't.
It instantly reminds me of the kid in Children of the Corn who looks like a grown man when he's like 10.
Yes, exactly. Spot on.
Like, that's where my head goes to whenever someone mentions child looks like man.
Yes. Yeah. That's a good reference point.
Yeah. And, you know, certainly works for Stephen King stuff. So, Julia, is there anything else that stood out to you? Because for me, I feel like I'm starting to be a broken record with just saying how much I enjoy these. But since this was a new experience for you, I want to hear a little bit more about how you felt either overall or if there's specific moments you want to pinpoint.
I think it's just, you know, for me, it's very, I love to read, but I rarely read comics. And so for me, you know, once I knew I was going to be reading the entire Dark Tower series, I went ahead and bought the Marvel Omnibus and bought these comics as well, because I knew I would get there eventually. So this is, for me, my first foray into reading reading a comic, reading the story as a picture, as a, you know, as a graphic novel. So it's like I said, a little bit different because it's not exactly what I had in my head. So you go, okay, you know, with a book, they describe things and I have pictures in my own head. And this is now, okay, these pictures are now being replaced by these pictures that they've drawn for me to show me the way they want me to see it, right? Which is a whole different art form and one that I'm not particularly used to, but is like, I'm trying to really get into and be like, okay, this is very cool that they get to pick this specific art to, you know, this artist's style specifically to show me this, the way that they want me to see this story. So I think it was a really cool way to dive into it and be a very, it really makes it feel very, very different from the novel because it isn't my version. It's somebody else's version in a way, if that makes sense.
No, it totally does because, you know, like you said, we've had the books. We also had the movie after all of these came out pretty much. And every interpretation of The Dark Tower is going to be different. And sometimes for me personally, it's hard to visualize these big expansive worlds that King creates, especially with The Dark Tower. I get really excited when there's a map showing me where things are supposed to be in relation to each other at the front of a book.
Sure, sure. And I'm sure you could find one of those. I'm sure someone's made a Dark Tower map for sure. You can go on Etsy for that.
Yeah, I think in some of the copies of the books I have, one or two of them have maps of like where that particular book is taking place.
Okay.
So you get these little pieces basically because you know that they go beyond those areas when you look at it. You're like, okay, I know for a fact like this place is missing and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a long journey. They're going to go a lot of places. And I think these comics really help with just understanding what is in someone's head when they think about The Dark Tower. And, you know, Stephen King was given an executive producer credit on these comics. So I imagine, you know, his input was given at various points in time. And, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, Robin Firth was a research assistant of King's, I think specifically for The Dark Tower, and has like, I think a few books like The Dark Tower Compendiums or something like that. So I trust Robin's judgment better than mine to know where things are.
But a map still wouldn't hurt, you know.
I mean, yeah.
If we are taking after Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings journey, we got a map for Middle Earth. So all, you know, all fair. But I think it also, for me, you know, really everything enriches Roland's character for me. So like, I have never been a big fan of Westerns. And I guess the reason I just didn't understand them. And I feel like now that I've understand them through Roland's eyes, I'm like, oh, I'm kind of interested in Westerns now because I could never understand the like really cold, silent type. Like, I didn't get what was going on behind there, but you go, okay, if he has all of this trauma and all of these things that happened to him that he's building up upon and this is where it's coming from, I understand it better now. So Stephen King can get you into horror and Westerns, either one you choose or both as it did me.
Yeah. It's kind of wild when people are like, oh, I don't like Stephen King because he likes horror. And I'm like, but he doesn't only write horror. Like, I have a friend who doesn't like horror novels, but she loves The Dark Tower. And I was like, okay, well, you know, aside from the 8 Dark Tower books, there are still things that I think she would enjoy. Like The Eyes of the Dragon is very much in this vein because it ties in. You have the tie-in with The Stand, but still, you know, something post-apocalyptic might not be a good read for everyone, but there's always something there. And, you know, he has his Bill Hodges trilogy now. He has the hard case crime novels, which aren't rooted in horror. They're rooted in crime, even though horrific things happen.
Sure. I mean, in a lot of his like early Bachman stuff, you know, something like Running Man, or Road Work or something like that, they aren't strictly horror novels. Even The Long Walk, I don't think is strictly a horror novel, although it is horrific. But it's also fantastic. You know, it's one of his best novels, in my opinion.
You can say the same for the Different Seasons collection, which has The Body, Shawshank, and a couple others that my brain is blanking on app pupil and I think breathing method. So you have these stories that are very much rooted in characters instead of what is horrifying them. So, you know, it's not like everything is going to be Pet Sematary or It or even The Shining. So I think there's a lot of room for people to really find something to love with Stephen King. And with these comics, you know, there are Dark Tower comics and there are The Stand comics and there are a handful of others. So even within the comic book world, you're seeing these different kinds of stories be adapted. And I wanted to get your thoughts on this because I think comics are kind of the perfect medium to adapt The Dark Tower. Do you think so too?
Interesting. Tell me why you think that.
Because with comics, you don't need to rely on CGI to make things happen. You can have all of these fantastical elements coming together on the page and you don't have to worry about whether or not you'll be able to do it, you know, and budget-wise, I think comics are more affordable, honestly, in comparison to however much they spent on that Dark Tower movie getting, you know, Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey and that FX budget. But for me, if you want something that you know is supposed to be visually stunning, I think comics are a really good playground for that.
I agree, but I also think that we're now going into a time period where things that were previously impossible to film can now be possible. So take, for example, the Talisman's coming up, right? The Talisman is a book that, you know, came out in the early 80s. No way you could make that movie because it's so special effects heavy. Mm-hmm. But now you can. You have the Duffer Brothers, you have Steven Spielberg, you have these people who are like special effects masters that are going to create a world that will be believable. You know, would I rather it be a practical set? Of course. I would always prefer practical effects to CGI, but we do what we can. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the Dark Tower movie. I don't think I will. Everyone I've talked to has said, don't see it. And I go, okay, that's fine. If all of the constant readers say don't, I won't. And that's, I don't feel like I'm going to miss anything. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, don't.
But I think it's just kind of reading the book two different ways. Because this really, to me, even though parts of this story were familiar in this comic, it still felt like I was reading a totally different book. It didn't feel like the same thing, really, even though I knew the character, obviously. But just because it isn't, it is something visual beyond my imagination. It is something printed, you know, the art there. So I think it's looking at everything, you know, looking at it as a novel, looking at it as a comic, looking at it as a movie. They're just three different, completely different things. And so I think it's just really what you prefer. And do you really even have to have a preference? You just go, okay, I'll take it in every form I can get it.
I'm covering everything. So that is my option there. But, you know, to be fair, it's not quite an adaptation. It's an expansion of this stuff. So you have that going for it, I guess, because it's not supposed to be a one-to-one adaptation. It's, hey, here's this character you love. Let's give you more about him. And this is something that Star Wars is really good at doing. You have the core Skywalker saga. Then you have, you know, all of these other shows, and you have a couple other movies, you have all of the books, all of the comics, you can really dive deep with Star Wars. And it's easy to see how and why the Dark Tower can be that thing for King.
Oh, yeah, because it's a massive universe, right? Like, you can go as far in it as you want to, which is, you know, makes it similar to Star Wars in that way. So, I mean, I'll take Stephen King spinoffs to the cows come home, please.
Same. And I am definitely glad that production is getting better for these movies, because let me tell you, I've watched some bad Stephen King movies.
Yeah, there's some good ones. There's some bad ones, you know, and we love them. We love them all for their own separate different things.
Yeah. Well, Julia, any final thoughts on The Gunslinger, The Journey Begins?
I think I'm going to definitely be excited to, when I come back around to the comics the second time after I finish the series, like reading it in order, right? Because I'm a big believer in reading in order, but it was kind of fun to dip into the toe of I'm just going to dip my toe in randomly. And like, I understand most of it. I had you gave me some guidance and everything was fine. And here we are. So I think if you've read the series, then you should definitely read the comics, because they're just more of the characters you know and love.
Yeah, I will second that for sure. Beautiful art, beautiful coloring. You really can't find too much to dislike about these, in my opinion, unless for some reason you're reading them and you don't like The Dark Tower.
Oh, I'm sure you could find someone who will have a very, very vehement opinion about, that will be just the opposite of yours, but that's what fair. Life is for.
But, you know, I haven't found too many people who have read these, apparently, so I don't think we have to worry about that right this moment.
You are gathering them together with this podcast, and you are encouraging people to read it, which is the best.
I appreciate that. Julia, thank you so much for joining me on this bonus episode of Chat Cemetery. Before we go, you are working on a short film for a Stephen King short story, is that correct?
That is very correct, yes. I have the rights to my very favorite Stephen King short story, I Know What You Need, which is in the Night Shift collection. I got a Dollar Baby contract, so you can buy the rights to certain short stories of his for a dollar for a year and make a movie of it. So I am, at the end of July 2021, going to be filming. The cool thing about it, filming, the story takes place at the University of Maine, and we're filming at the University of Maine in the story locations. So we're filming in the dorm that Stephen King stayed in when he lived there, which is crazy. So I'm very, very excited. And, you know, part of the contract is you have to send a copy of the finished film to Stephen King to watch, because he wants to see how people interpret his work still. So I have this end game of knowing that he's getting a copy, which is pretty amazing. And to get to adapt my favorite short story of his and make it in the way that I see the story, you know, and try to keep it as true to, you know, word for word as I can, but also it's my vision of how I see it. So it's really, really exciting as a constant reader to get to do that.
That's amazing. I am definitely looking forward to it. I hope it all goes extremely smoothly for you.
Thank you. So do I, definitely. But it's just going to be a dream come true, just being to, you know, because I've been reading Stephen King since I was a kid. And so all of these towns in Maine have always sounded very alluring and exotic to me. And so to now get to be there and filming there in the middle of Bangor, you know, is just like a fantasy world. It feels like I'm at Disneyland. It makes me so incredibly happy.
Awesome. Well, once it's out in the world for everyone to see, you'll have to come back on so we can chat more about it.
Okay, sounds good.